Das. He. Dai, the carriage of the palanquin.
The carriage of the palanquin.
Ishvara Vacha. The words of the master.
The words of the master.
King Rahugan.
King Rahugan.
Sapupalambam.
Sapupalambam.
With reproach.
With reproach.
Upakanya.
Upakanya.
Hearing.
Hearing.
Upaya.
Upaya.
The means.
The means.
Turiya.
Turiya.
From the fourth one.
From the fourth one.
Sankita Manasa.
Sankita Manasa.
Whose minds were afraid.
Whose minds were afraid.
Tam.
Tam.
Him, the king.
Him, the king.
Vigyapayam.
Vigyapayam.
Bahuhu.
Bahuhu.
Informed.
Informed.
Translation. When the palanquin carriers heard the threatening words of Maharaj Rahugana, they became very afraid of his punishment and began to speak to him as follows. Report. According to political science, the king sometimes tried to pacify his subordinates, sometimes chastises them, sometimes derides them, and sometimes rewards them. In this way, the king rules his subordinates. The bearers of the palanquin could understand that the king was angry and that he would chastise them. So these are different activities that a ruler, his subordinates, employs in order to get their subordinates to stay in line with the service that needs to be done. So there's nothing particularly wrong with that. It's just a normal duty of the king. But I'll read the next verse, because this verse and the next verse, we see how there are proper duties for all the social divisions, and how if they're not properly executed in the Dharma Shama, it causes a problem. So I'll read the next verse as well. Nāvayam naradeva pramantha labhan niyamanu dhaha neva dhamaha ayam runeva yuktopi nāvukam vijji namina saha padham tukha vayam parayama ki. O Lord, please note that we are not at all negligent in discharging our duties. We have been faithfully carrying this palanquin according to your desire. But this man, who has been recently engaged in work with us, cannot walk very swiftly. Therefore, we are not able to carry the palanquin with him. Of course, they're referring to Dhamma. The poor post one way says he loved to love those from the poor. The other palanquin carriers were sutras, whereas Jagvarup was not only a high caste brahmana, but also a great devotee. Sutras do not sympathize with other living beings, but a Vaishnava cannot act like a sutra. Whenever a sutra and a brahmana Vaishnava are combined, there will certainly be imbalance in the execution of duties. The sutras were walking with the palanquin without at all caring for the ants on the ground, but Jagvarup could not act like a sutra, and therefore difficulty arose. So here we see that Prabhupada mentions that whenever a sutra and a brahmana and Vaishnava combined, there will certainly be limited balance in the execution of duties. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches that there are four natural social orders of life. They're created by Krishna, the Supreme Lord, and therefore they exist everywhere, even in the upper planetary system to the lower planetary system, these four orders are there. And that is that there is always, just as every body has a head, the arms, the belly, and the legs. Without a head or a thinking brain, then the rest of the body is useless. So the head, with the brain intact, is the most important part comparatively. But they're all the elements of the body working together. So the arms are the strong protectors of the body, and the head is the intelligence. The stomach is distributing nutrients all over the body to keep the body fit and healthy, so it's supplying the body with what it needs. And the legs are doing the hard work, the labour. So society is like that, but there's always a division of intelligent persons, known as Brahmanas, although in different societies they may have different names, but they are Brahmanas, and they have the qualities by which they are capable of intelligently guiding society, and specifically they guide society according to the scriptures coming down from the personality of the Godhead. They can understand those scriptures and understand how that everyone can be engaged nicely in such a way, according to rules and regulations, to keep peace of society, stop everything from becoming chaotic and confused and pointless, and they engage everyone's combined energies for the benefit of all of the Indians. That takes a lot of intelligence. If that's not there, we get the opposite. We get chaos. We get everyone working for themselves. So because there's no Brahmanas, we have a situation in the world where the whole world has one problem, the pandemic. But the problem is no one wants to work for the benefit of the whole world. Everyone just wants to work for their own benefit, and by doing that, they just exacerbate the problem. The only way to fix this problem is to work for the benefit of the whole world. But that takes intelligence. Not only does it take intelligence, but it takes the qualities where one is not acting for one's own personal ambitions. Greed, wealth, position, etc. Or one is not corrupted by working for higher authorities who are corrupted by lust, greed and anger. So the Brahmanas have that mind control, sense control. They're peaceful. They don't have these strong materialistic desires by associating with loads of passion and ignorance. They're associated with the sattvic mode, and they become very qualified to see what should be done and what should not be done for the benefit of all, and they have no personal interest but to work for the pleasure of the Supreme to implement that which is beneficial for everyone, which is in accordance with the Lord's desire. So that is the ground. That is what Srila Prabhupada is creating in this society. So that intellectual society, there's always a class of Brahmanas, but as we will see, they actually still have to be trained. The qualities are there, they have to be picked up, but the qualities are there. Or these people have some spiritual tendency to understand God and work for the benefit of others and intellectual. That the qualities are there, and then they have to be seen and then trained by samskara. And so then you have those who take the guidance of the Brahmanas and implement. They're the leaders, the rulers, the administrators. But those persons are persons who are respected. And they're respected because of they are quite heroic in leadership and very resourceful. They're not persons. A leader must be a person that is respected. And also, as we see here, sometimes feared. As the saying goes in politics, that one's position is safer as a politician if they're feared rather than loved. Anyway, that's a political thing. It's not necessarily a Shastri thing. Actually, if someone is loved and respected. Respect is not so much because they're feared, but respected because they have good qualities. So that is there, and then in society there is also those who produce, and of course the those leaders are meant to protect the citizens from all sorts of dangers. And what we see in the world sometimes is that the leaders themselves, because they're not resourceful, and because they don't have the interest of the citizens or the heart, then they're part of the problem, whereby everyone is in danger. And then you have the Vaishyas, and the Vaishyas are supposed to follow these scriptural injunctions as to what is honest work, which is beneficial for all the entities. And that honest work is that there should be not industrialization for the sake of profit. There's nothing wrong with industrialization, there's nothing wrong with technology. But if we just do business just for the sake of the amassing a huge amount of profit, which is hoarded by miserly persons who use it only for their sense gratification, and so many people in the world have to suffer as a result, that is not business. That is not the business we want. We want the business where, therefore, agriculture is a very important business because it produces the food of society. So certainly there will be a profit, but profit cannot be at the expense of people who go hungry. And if there is excess, then that can be traded and people can amass their other luxuries. And of course, also cow protection, because with the milk products and the agriculture, you can get all the proteins and all the nutrients without having to kill animals, which causes a lot of karma. And the milk also is very important, because milk actually, when one takes the milk, it actually develops the fine brain tissues by which the higher classes, the more intelligent classes of society, can then very intelligently do their service as Vaishyas, as Kshatriyas or as Brahmins. Actually, scientifically it's proven. The latest scientific research shows that they used to think, even together at some months, they used to think that the older you get, basically you don't develop any new brain cells. But now they've actually conclusively proved that it doesn't matter how old you're getting, you can actually produce these new finer brain tissues, which actually, are very important for very high intellectual thought that such as the Brahmins have. And that which produces good, as we say, good diet is on high on the list scientifically, because we know also that good diet means, especially these milk products, the traditional vegetarian diet, free from anxiety. Too much anxiety, if one is more peaceful, then, and one gets, one is moderate, and one's eating, sleeping, resting, and work, then that also produces a good brain cell. So actually the standard practices of the average devotee, even in Bhagavad Gita, all of those combined together actually produce the good brain cells by which one can. So therefore, the business, the Vaishyas, they follow the teachings of Gita because it produces an intelligent class of the population of the world, and especially which is required for the training of the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas. and that keeps the everything in order. And then of course you have the sutras, or the workers who do the labour. They don't, you know, they like to do the labour. Actually, in these natural divisions, which means that you will get a class of persons and they have a tendency to do something, you know, some, you know, they want to follow a spiritual way of life by which they can also guide others. In other words, you know, somehow connect the population of the world with the Supreme Lord, so everyone is in harmony with the Supreme Lord and working in such a way that gradually they also attain liberation. There's that natural inclination by some. Prabhupada was able to spot that. So, some, you know, naturally, they like to be warriors. If there's war, you don't need a draft or they'll volunteer. They're just always ready. Yes, that is what we do, like that. Whereas others, it's the last thing they want to do. And then there's business. In one sense, Prabhupada mentioned once, you can't really, education of someone, unless you're a Vaishya, you know, by nature. Vaishyas by nature, business people by nature have a business sense. So you get a little training, they'll make money. They'll make money out of thin air. But I would give different examples of people in India, you know, who made money out of nothing and become, you know, billionaires, and their descendants are still billionaires. But others, you can put them through the education system and, you know, business school and everything. They're not vices. But, so the training must be there, the propensity must be there as well. So, we're going to look at that because here we have an incompatibility where someone who's a Brahmin is being asked to do the work of a Sudra. So, Jagarat, of course, is a Brahmana, which means that he has a different type of knowledge. The Brahmanas see that within every living entity there is a spirit soul, that I am a spirit soul, and every other living entity is also another individual spirit soul. They are equally part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And therefore, being part of the Lord, they respect it. They offer respect that the Lord has placed them in a certain body, and they have their allotment of life, the duration of life, a type of food, the place, you know, opportunity to, you know, mating, and food and shelter and defense, and that the Lord has allotted that, therefore we do not have the right to impose upon their allotment by the Lord. So Jagarat was like that he was very careful that not to step even on an ant. And we know that in the worship of the deity also, that if one worships the deity, even if one offers all sorts of elaborate paraphernalia and everything appears to be very pucker, but if one is envious of the living entities, the Lord is not very happy to accept that service. Because in one sense, one should see that every body is a temple of the Lord, because the Lord is in that body to accompany that living entity. So, Jagarat had this transcendental vision, but he's being asked to perform the work of a sudra. Now the sudras, they don't have that vision, and so they don't, you know, their vision is that the work I'm doing is all that matters. There's nothing beyond that. That is the only important thing, that I'm doing this work, I have to carry this karma from, Whatever happens to anyone else or any other living entity in the course of that encounter coming to the king, I don't care. This work is all that really matters. And there's no, you know, they don't consider any other consequences of. But also, generally, but you know, the sutras who have that inclination, they are attracted to that type of work. If you ask them to sit in office and plan out what is beneficial for, you know, all living entities, they just, you know, one time it was in the Gurukul, in Vrindavan, there was one boy, very, very disturbing, and the teachers mentioned this, just sort of fell. And they were saying that it was just making it impossible. But as I said, then, you know, disturbing the other students, then, you know, what do you feel with the power? You know, why someone, you know, he obviously wants to, you can't sit in the car. If someone, you know, those who have that propensity, it's like the disturbance is that, oh, I have to stop reading. I have to stop studying. I have to stop this. You know, that's the disturbance. For others, that I have to do it at all, that's the disturbance. You give them the plough, oh, yes, all bad luck, because you work hard. And that's it. So, it's not an artificial system. So Prabhupada mentioned this, let them do some farming work for the temple. So here, now Prabhupada mentions this statement, whenever a sutra and a Brahman and Vaishnava combined, there will certainly be an imbalance of execution of duties. I'm going to look at that, this you know, in society and individually, when the system presented in the Gita is not there, the anomalies that can happen. And how this, you know, I'm going to take an example, you know, that close to our heart, which when Prabhupada was establishing Krishna consciousness in the America in the early days, the early 60s, there was a problem with the draft for national service. And so we see this incompatibility where the government, the modern king is usually a sutra elected by other sutras. The modern ruler is seen that these boys in the Hare Krishna movement, they should be drafted and sent off to Vietnam to fight. So I'll just read some. Now, in one, what to do? You know, there's one letter here. In 1967, Srila Prabhupada replied in a letter to Jai Govinda. He said, I understand that the draft board is also disturbing you. It is also disturbing me. But we have no other recourse than Krishna. Do your best to serve Krishna and he will give you the required intelligence to cope with disturbing situations. So, here's the first instruction that we see from Srila Prabhupada, that as with Jagannath, basically he's a tolerant. Of course, we later see that he preaches as well. And but at this particular point, he can only tolerate. If he doesn't tolerate, he'll be beaten. At this particular point, he can only tolerate. There's not a lot he can do about it. Although he's, you know, he's already been harassed by that voice and what have you. So, But Prabhupada says that what can we do? So, in other words, we have no other recourse than Krishna, so we must tolerate. He says, do your best to serve Krishna, and he will give you the required intelligence to cope with the disturbing situation. So if you tolerate, but also, this is our duty to serve Krishna, this is our occupation, spiritual occupation. If we do that, Krishna will give the intelligence how to deal with that situation. Both how to be tolerant, where you can't do something, and where you can do something, he will show you how to do that. So, that's a nice instruction there. Now, as examples of some of the things that Srila Prabhupada... so, for instance, in 1969, in my Loon conversation, Prabhupada, he instructed that we make our institution recognized as a spiritual institution with certified spiritual education such as Bhakti Shastri. Examinations, you know, proper certification examinations, so that his students could avoid being wrongfully and forcefully conscripted into work. So this, Prabhupada always wanted to implement these, but that really prompted that, okay, this work must be done now to implement this certification. They must see that we're training these boys and girls as priests. What's the word? But he wanted there to be government recognition. By doing that, so there's an example of how Krishna's group, Prabhupada's taking intelligence, or here's something we can do about it. We haven't done it yet, so how much we have to tolerate. So some boys are getting put in jail, some boys are having to be hid, so that they have to tolerate. But gradually, what can we do? He's thinking in those terms. Here's a letter to Brahmananda in San Francisco, 1968. He says, by the grace of Krishna, Advaita is being transferred to Bellevue. Now try to get him out with the help of the psychiatrist who helped get out Kirtananda. So of course, that will finalise the matter, but we must find out the way to take permission from the draft board that our institution is a recognised religious institution of Hindu Vedic origin, and we are training students for preaching God consciousness and building up their character by strict moral principles. Therefore, these students cannot be called for fighting. By temperament, they are unfit for fighting, because they have been trained to become perfect Brahmins. The business of the Brahmins is to teach people spiritual education. Fighting is the means for the Kshatriyas. Therefore, we must find out some means for protecting our students in the future to save them from this unnecessary botheration. So you see how Prabhupada is thinking in terms that yes, tolerance must be there, but we can't let the work for Krishna stop. And we have our duty at that. We can't let others, you know, there's respect for all other living entities, but still we don't allow another service, whether by force or voluntarily, affect our own service to Krishna. That is authorized by the Lord. He says, you should consult a suitable lawyer in connection with this matter and do the needful. We can submit a copy of the remark made by the judge of the court here in relation to the imprisonment of one of our students, Prendidas, in which the man said, quote, be lenient with this boy as he belongs to an established religious organization which is doing much to combat drug addiction and promote the general health and welfare of the young people. So there Prabhupada mentioned these boys are doing good work that the government needs. So as a minister and as a minister of the association, I can give a certificate that all my students are ecclesiastical. They are neither fighting men nor mercantile men, so they can be called for fighting for unnecessary waste of time and valuable energy. In this connection, the caste system of the Hindus, in which Kshatriyas is trained up for fighting from the very beginning in martial spirit, they are fighting with young men recruited from the Sudra class, enforcing to fight. So there is a gulf of difference. Anyway, Krishna will say to Vaidya, just take help from the psychiatrist. And we see here that in this way, Prabhupada has implemented the Chadvara type of mode of action, that he appears like a dumb, not quite very intelligent person. You know, these boys, you know, there's something a little bit wrong upstairs. You know, there's a candle loose in the top paddock there. Don't put them out in the battlefield, you know, something. But somehow or another, you know, their mentality is not fit, you know, either by the engagement that they're doing or somehow or another, you know, you get some report that they're just not fit for fighting. So you see Prabhupada intelligently dealing with this problem. And it's a disturbance to Prabhupada, it's a disturbance to him, his movement. And so he had to do so much extra work to deal with the situation, and he's tolerated this, but toleration, you know, does mean that we tolerate something as we're doing our duty. The purpose of toleration is it so you can do your duty. So throughout the Gita, you see that Krishna asks Arjuna to tolerate. Why? So you can do your duty. That's the purpose of toleration. Not, you know, we don't take toleration that there's some disturbances, I can't do my duty, so I'll just tolerate disturbances. That's what we do. So, now, as another example, you know, how Prabhupada, by the creation of the movement and engaging everyone in, you know, the activities of, you know, because it's a bona fide movement, that was also a defense against, you know, the boys and girls being, you know, especially boys being drafted or, you know, being forced by the government, in this case the draft board. In some countries they draft them to do all sorts of different work, you know, they just like that. But here's another example of how Prabhupada, his movement, and he used this, he quoted this a lot. This is actually in the Quest for Enlightenment. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's preaching was to distribute love of God. This human life is especially meant for understanding what God is and loving Him. That's all. This is our only business. The cats and dogs and other lower animals, if you preach to them about Krishna consciousness, they will not understand. But human beings can understand. For example, this Krishna consciousness movement is being spread all over the world. And as you can see, here in your country, people are understanding. This is a special advantage of human life. One Christian priest in Boston was astonished to see our devotees. He issued a leaflet saying, "These Hare Krishna boys are our boys. Before they joined this movement, they did not care to see us or come to our church. But now they are mad after God." So this movement is certified by a Christian priest. So here he's saying that don't just take our certification. These boys and girls are mad after God. And that's is certified, you know, by this leader of Krishna. So again, he goes on to say further certification. And actually, you can see the potency of Lord Chaitanya's movement. I am a poor Indian. I came to America with 40 rupees. I had no money to bribe these young people. Oh, but laugh. But now they're mad after God. Seems practical. Now, if you try to bribe them to leave this religion, they will not go. So what is that intoxication? These boys and girls have given up all intoxication, but now, intoxicated with Hare Krishna, this is the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. A draft board officer came to see our centers. He said, what is the facility you have given these boys who have joined the Hare Krishna movement? It must be easier than the army. But when he investigated, he saw that these boys and girls are prohibited from engaging in illicit sex, intoxication, meat-eating and gambling. So he concluded that this movement is actually harder than the army. The army does not make these restrictions, which are very, very difficult to follow. But by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, these boys and girls are following them. So you see the... Now, in another... In 1975, Prabhupada also mentioned that, you know, actually this draft board officer, he went back and gave the report. They have no facility, simply rigidity. Okay. So, in that way, you know, Prabhupada's, you know, he established this movement as authorized to train people who have that propensity to have a sattvic, criminal, spiritual life. But also he, you know, made sure that it was well certified by its qualifications to be authorized all over the world to protect the members of this institution from the foolish governments of this world who may want to, you know, force the members of the Hare Krishna movement to give up their Krishna conscious activities at the present time and to employ them somehow or another according to some state of emergency or government emergency. So Prabhupada gave us this movement as a protection. In the same way that he created the Brahmacharini Ashram, because he saw that the governments are not protecting fathers are not, you know, the men are not protecting, they're exploiting. They have no protection. They have the only protection I'm giving is by Prabhupada's movement. So it's a training, but then that training is protected. Prabhupada then, you know, they will go on with their nice life and Krishna consciousness, but they will also be protected. So there we see how devotees tolerate, but also if we do our best to serve Krishna, he will give the intelligence how to cope with that disturbing situation. So let's look at the this Krishna consciousness movement. Its value is that it is presenting the teachings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead of how society can be properly organized. According to those Varna and Ashram, the different social and spiritual orders of life. If that is not as done, if that is not done, then there's chaos. So some of these different quotes I'm going to read here describe both the proper aspects and the chaotic, you know, aspects when it's not done. And this is the work of the Krishna consciousness movement, very, very important. So that there's not this as we see here, imbalance in the execution of duties. So basically all over the world there's an imbalance and therefore there's always a revolution. If you look at any country, there's still a revolution. The duties of the leaders are totally out of balance with the needs of the population. the demands of so many sections of the population are sometimes out of balance with the leaders. Everywhere you look, within families, within society, the duties of one section are not balanced with the duties of anyone else. Because everyone is not performing their duty for the sake of satisfying the Supreme under the guidance of those who can both understand the Supreme Lord and how everyone can be engaged. No. People are performing their duty. And in fact, you can't even mention the word duty. Duty is like a swear word. Duty. What did you just say to me? Duty is it. You can't mention that word. You can't mention the word training. Are we going to train? They train me and me. I'm a free agent, you know. So, basically, lust, greed, and anger. That is what is driving everyone's activities. There's no sense of duty. Duty gets in the way of lust, greed, and anger. There's an instruction. So, here, I read some examples. Now, in dialectical spiritualism, we get this discussion, sort of Prabhupada's mentioning, about leaders, politicians. As soon as the word politics comes up, he says, so this is politics, the occupation of kshatriyas. In Bhagavad Gita, the qualities of kshatriyas are given. So this is proper. Politicians should have this quality. He mentions Bhagavad Gita 1843. Heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity, and leadership are qualities of work for the kshatriyas. Of course, in modern politics, the king or president does not come onto the battlefield to exhibit his courage. He simply appears when there is a battle of words. But when there is an actual battle, he remains in a secluded place and lets the citizens fight. And he institutes a draft board to assure that they will. According to the Vedic system, however, when there is a fight, the king or president must be present on the battlefield and should lead the fight himself so that his men will be encouraged. The leader of a nation should fight with all his ability and be determined either to gain victory in the battle or lay down his life. Bhagavad Gita itself is a guidebook for kshatriyas. So you see this in, you know, both in India, you know, and personalities like Alexander the Great, and different personalities, you know, they go back 100 years, and not even that far, but in India, you know, they don't have to go back very far, you know, the leaders. It says that Bhagavad Gita itself is the guidebook for kshatriyas. In politics, there must be violence, because the king must emerge victorious. If the king is victorious, he will be respected. Strength must be there. So the king or the leaders, the politicians, they actually must be seen as persons who are powerful and strong and courageous and leaders and resourceful. If people don't see those qualities, then why should they follow them? We see in America that some of the population were called on to fight. And then the leader disappeared. And then the fighters, you know, get thrown in jail and have to face that. And they come again. Apart from this, the chief of the state must also be charitable. And formerly all great kings perform big yajna sacrifices. So then he goes on to say, well, that's, there you see, qualified people from the Nirvana of leaders in a qualified way, according to Gita, and the unqualified way. Again, mentioning those who are naturally want to fight. You know, this is a room conversation, 1968 in Montreal. So everyone who's got a particular type of profession, the potter, the washerman, and the florist, the grain dealer, the silver or gold dealer, the banker, everything, and the priest, and the warrior. So even in India still, there is no difficulty for draft work. There is a class, chhatri, or they will be very glad to be recruited as soldiers. They are very strong, they are called jat, gurkha. They don't like any other occupation. Fighting they like, and the Sikhs, the Jat caste, and the Gurkha, all. The whole British Empire was extended with the help of the Sikhs and the Gurkhas. The British took these Gurkhas and Sikhs to Burma, to Mesopotamia. They liquidated the empire because they lost India. The British soldiers were not helping to keep up their empire. These Indian soldiers, in the first war, they gained for these Indian soldiers, and they fought in France and everywhere very nicely. They are fighter class. They like to fight. And fighting is not going on every day, so the arrangement was, just like you have to fight for a state, so there is no monthly salary system. You're awarded by the government, a certain tract of land free. You produce grains and utilise the land. No tax for you, but when there will be war, you shall fight. Very nice arrangement. You see the wonderful arrangement between the governments and the warriors. They are very, very expert. And these people, they love to fight, and they were looked after, and so wonderful they were that literally they expanded the whole British Empire. But when the British Empire lost to India, the British Empire gradually disappeared. Because now the leaders. For the citizens and the chattel owners. Therefore there's no need to engage people who are not qualified for the service, because the point is, there's so many qualified people, and why get someone who's qualified for something better? What does people that qualified for something better, why do that? You know, what if they're the rarer class, harder to find? This is mentioned here in this class, Srimad Bhagavatam class, 1972. And he's speaking on verses 1, Canto 1, chapter 2, verses 28 to 29. This is Vrindavan. Atapandi Dhiji Shrestha. Dhiji means Brahmana Chakshya Vaishya, but Shrestha means Brahmana. So they're all twice born, Brahmana Chakshya. Shrestha, Dhiji Shrestha, specifically means the Brahmana, the best of them. Because human civilization means accepting this Vana Ashram, there must be classification. Not that everyone is the same. Everyone on the same level. Everyone on the same level means Sudra. No knowledge. No knowledge, no philosophy, no culture. Simply eat, sleep, and fly. The present civilization is suffering because there is no such thing as Varnashram, the Bhagavad. There is no selection, that there must be the most intelligent class of men, Brahmana. The real Chakra, who can give protection to the people, and the Vaishya, who can actually give protection to the cows and produce agriculture, agricultural products and trade, and Sudras, ordinarily labour class. There must be divisions. They must be trained up. I have repeatedly said in America that there is a draft board, they call conscription. They call any young man to the military department, but most of the boys, young men, they try to avoid this military. Most of them. One of the causes of the hippie movement is due to the government's draft board. So Prabhupada correctly pointed out, you know, they've got this huge hippie movement. And if you look at some of the main thing that really just turn, yes, I'm going to become a hippie. Otherwise, there's safety in numbers. Otherwise, I'm going to be conscripted and sent off to Vietnam. And what is the result? He said, so I've repeatedly said, why do they avoid? In India, still we have got some martial races, the Gurkhas and Sikhs. They'll be very glad to accept military training, still because of the Kshatriya spirit. But in other countries, they've been made all Shudras. How can they take up Kshatriya spirit? That is not possible. So according to this Varnashram, there must be training. Some classes of men must be trained as nice Brahmanas. Some people must be trained as nice Kshatriyas. Some people must be trained as nice and Vaishyas. And Sudra does not require any. Everyone is Sudra. Janama Jayate Sudra. By birth, everyone is Sudra. Samskara Bhavendija. By training, one becomes Vaishya, one becomes Kshatriya, one becomes Brahma. What is that training? Where is that training? All Sudra. And how can you expect good government? Sudra government. All the sutras are taken vote by hook or crook and they are occupying government posts. And this is the problem that they're having in democracy. That one of the situations you have in America is that although a huge proportion of the population support some sort of insurrection and dragging down the old politicians and even storm Capitol Hill, the ascension of governments won't go against them because they don't want to lose their vote. They don't want to lose the vote of the citizens. And because they don't want to lose the vote, therefore they're literally in the control by the Sudras. And also, it's the Sudras who will elect someone into government who represents the Sudras. Another Sudra. So that has caused a huge problem. This very problem, Prabhupada speaking, is exactly finding out in America right now. The problem where the Sudras, by hook or by crook, somehow or another, they're in all spheres, gradually getting someone into power that represents their, their super aspirations. Eat, sleep, marry, basic animal life sometimes. And then there's chaos all around. So this is actually, we see the huge chaos that is presented. He says, therefore, their only business in this Kali Yuga, eating, sleeping, eating flesh, drinking wine, maleches, yavanas, are accepting government posts. What good government can you expect? Forget good government for millions of years. Unless you establish the Varnashram Dham, there is no question of good government. There must be first-class Kshatriya who can take charge of the government. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is so important. The leaders of society, they should take very serious attention how they can improve the social condition of this world. Not only here, everywhere. Simply, it is going on in ignorance and illusion. Everything. Vain. No clear idea. Here is a clear idea. Vasudeva Paraveda. You are educating people, but where is your education to teach people about Vasudeva, about Krishna? You cannot expect human civilization in a nonsense society. So, you see the chaos that it causes when basically there's no training. Everyone is Sudra, and if there's no training, those Sudras are either in a leadership position, they're in mercantile positions, they're literally throughout all levels of society. There may be some training in business and some training in military, but quite often that training doesn't actually bring them above the level of the Sudra. Although there's some propensity there, it's not the complete training that would be offered according to Bhagavad Gita, proper training. Just like cleanliness, Now, everyone knows you want to keep health, you keep clean. But the cleanliness followed by those who follow scripture and talk coming down from the personality of Godhead, the most intelligent person, they become clean. You know, they'll bathe in the morning, in the evening, not just every few days, once a week. And then put a bit of talcum powder, a bit of perfume, a bit of deodorant. They cleanse their body, properly. And cleaning also means in the heart. Cleansing goes right into the heart. If there's lust, greed, and anger there, that also needs to be cleansed out. And one's environment should be cleaned. Prabhupada said that in the future, for that one thing, cleanliness, this movement will be seen as important and famous all over the world. Or cleanliness, you want to see cleanliness. So, although there's training in finances and sometimes military and sometimes politics, unless it's done under the guidance of the Supreme Lord, it's very basic there in our sutras. In fact, a little knowledge is dangerous. A little knowledge and a lot of power, and we dangerous. So, now, one time, Srila Prabhupada, again, how he used this in a preaching context. One time in San Francisco, 1968. So, of course, there are so many things which are problematic in this world, and all of them can be traced back to no one really knows what is proper activity and what is not proper activity to do. No one has, there's complete confusion, and therefore everyone's duties are conflicting with each other, and there's just chaos from top to bottom. And that is because they don't follow the Gita. So, but the solutions to all the problems is this Krishna consciousness, and this Krishna consciousness offers the ultimate solution of going back to the spiritual world. That if one performs one's duties in this lifetime, what happens is that when we perform our, according to Bhagavad Gita 1845 and those verses leading up to 55, that if everyone is engaged in their natural duties according to the natural propensities, but properly trained in those duties, and they're engaged in those duties under spiritual guidance of those who now know how to engage their propensities in the service of the Supreme Lord. So, for the benefit of all the entities all over the world, what happens is that as one does that, whether one is a sudra or what have you, that they're all thinking. Prabhupada mentions, one starts to think about this. This is in the purport of Bhagavad Gita 1857. Under the Guru's direction, one works thinking, I have been appointed in this particular duty of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I will perform this duty while always remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that, if everyone does that, and it's got to be done under a spiritual guidance, it cannot be done whimsically. Prabhupada mentions in that purport that if one says, oh, I've been engaged in this particular duty under God, but it's not actually authorized, that's actually whimsical, and it's not accepted as devotional service. One should not only do the authorized duty, and even if it's authorized, one should still not be whimsical. That one's duty in Krishna consciousness should not disturb other duties. But I've been asked to do this duty, and I don't care how many devotees I disturb by doing it. I've been asked to do it. That's also mentioned. That's not mentioned anywhere in our scriptures. So, now, Prabhupada, this ultimate goal, if one performs, what happens is if one performs, I have this particular duty, even one's a sutra, digging the hole, I don't really know much, but I know, I've been told, coming down from the Brahmanas, you know, this is the proper duty, and I really like it, but it fits in with all the society, and therefore it's very pleasing to the Supreme Lord. By doing that, the Lord actually helps that person become self-realized. In other words, they realize, I'm a servant of God. If you're doing your duty, you work every day, and every day you're thinking, crazy, there's a connection with God, you actually start to think, I'm a servant of God. You actually become self-realized. That is the Brahma Bhuta platform. So they actually come to the Brahma, and because you're working for God, it's not like I'm working for some corrupt politicians or some, you know, pointless. No. I'm working for God. I love my service. It has purpose. It has meaning. Because one does that, one comes to that Brahma Buddha conception, Brahma Buddha platform, and some comes to the conception. God is eternal. I'm eternal. I'm serving Him now. I'm serving Him in my next life. That's wonderful. From that, as described, one becomes eligible for pure Rasa service. And therefore, one begins to hear and chant in the association of devotees. And by that hearing and chanting, one's Brahma Bhuta platform develops more. From the vague conception to very clear conception, and to a very wonderful ability to be completely detached from the happiness and the stress and the loss of gain and the results of activities, and only just be concerned with the pleasure of the Lord. So that Brahma Bhuta platform develops. And that allows one, that hearing and chanting, which is devotional service in itself, then brings one to a point of complete detachment and full attachment to the spiritual. And in that platform, one can understand the personality of God. And I understand this. There is a personality of God, and here is teaching. Then one can just enter into the hearing and the chanting more and more, and the faith develops more and more, and the purity develops more and more, and one comes to the point of pure love of God, and that pure love of God allows one to go back. I'll just read this last quote here. This is a room conversation in San Francisco, 1968. Prabhupada, if you want to go to Krishna Loka, you will go to Krishna. And this woman, the devotee, says, will you be there, Swamiji? Will you be there? Prabhupada, if I am confident, then I should be there. Devotee, that same woman, would that be very nice? The devotee, another devotee says, his question is a little unclear. He's asking about the percentage of happiness and what have you, the purity of women. So basically, he's asking what it's like to go back to the Krishna Loka and what are the qualifications. But he's asking, what percent? There's an interesting word there that when we go to Krishna Loka, don't be caught by the dharpur. And everyone sort of, is that not nice? He says, there was one clergyman lecturing in Sheffield, the coal mine, that if you don't worship Jesus Christ, then you'll go to hell. So first of all, one man asked him that, do you know Jesus Christ? So one of them inquired, well, what is his number? Because they all have worked his numbers. So they thought Jesus Christ must be one of us. So he must have a number. what is his number. Then the clergyman could understand, oh, to whom I am speaking. He was not understanding that. So then he explained, oh, Jesus Christ is not one of you. He is Son of God. He has come to deliver you. If you don't worship him, then you will go to hell. Then one of them said, what is hell? Then he described, oh, it is very dark, moist, and so on. So they were silent because they worked in the mind. They were silent. What is this hell? It is alright. Then the clergyman thought how to impress him. And after a few minutes he said, no, the hell is very dangerous. How? There is no newspaper. Oh, how horrible. Because in your Western country, Prabhupada says, everyone is fond of the newspaper. So he stressed, he hit the point that there is no newspaper. So we have hit the point that there is no taxman. So basically, by following the process of the Bhagavad Gita and helping people, that everyone's duties, according to their natural propensities and qualities, they're all properly engaged, rather than being forced or, you know, foolishly doing something that's not compatible with them. If we teach people that process, then ultimately all the anomalies of this world will disappear even while in this world. There'll be peace and cooperation between all men. And ultimately, you have solved the whole solution by going back to the Krishna Bhagavan. I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments about this in relationship to Jagannath. So the question is, if Jagara knew that he wouldn't get karma from stepping on the ants, then why was he still careful in not stepping on the ants? That's a very good question. So, yes, as Srila Prabhupada mentioned, that one should do one's service, but not whimsically. Whimsical means any way we please. Not the way we should, but any way we feel, without properly thinking. That's called whimsical. So, a devotee, they try their best to do their work, their activities, so just like yourself, you're probably a student, and you help out your mum and dad, service to Krishna. So we try our best, but everything in this world that we do has some fault because we're in the material world. It's not possible to actually do everything perfectly. There's some fault, especially in Kali Yuga, in every single thing that we do. And Krishna mentions that in the Bhagavad Gita, 1848. That every endeavor is covered by some fault. So Krishna says it himself. In this world, don't expect that you can just miss every single endeavor. We should try, but if you're going to fall onto a busy road because you're trying not to step on ants, or get stuck in the middle of a road, or, you know, some problem, or somehow there's a little land under a piece of dust and you didn't see it and you stood on it and squashed him, the smithereens, it's almost impossible. So, in this world, there's fault in everything. So we try. We try to do our duty, but we understand that it's not possible to do everything perfectly. But we try. He says, just as fire is covered by smoke, so when we light a fire, there's some smoke. So that smoke is a little disturbing. He says, therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. So all of us have some other words. Jagmarat, he might think, it's just too hard not to step on these ants. So therefore, let me give up my duty, because it's just too hard. There's too many, you know, problems, and there's some fault in this duty. Arjun, he was thinking, I have a duty to protect the citizens and to fight for Krishna, to teach religious principles, but I'm seeing so many faults, so I have to, you know, in that some people must die, but I don't want them to die, so I want to give up this duty. So Krishna says, Arjun, you cannot give up your duty. And Jagrat, in his last life, he did give up his duty. He had some duties to his spiritual master, but he saw some fault. That if I do my duties for my spiritual master, how can I look after this deer? Oh, I'll give up my duties for my spiritual master, I'll just look after the deer. But then, because there's fault in everything, he couldn't look after the deer either. And because he gave up his spiritual master's duty, he had to take birth again. So if one gives up one's duties that are given by the spiritual teachers, the danger is one won't go back to Godhead, but one will have to take birth again and again and again. So that's a bigger fault. So Krishna says that even if there's some fault, even if Jagrat, trying his best not to step on ants, but stepped on one's head and squashed that all the lamb's head and obliterated, then because he's doing his service to Krishna, then Krishna says that fault is removed. I will not look at that fault while you're doing your duty. While you're doing your duty and there's some fault, I'll not look at that, nor will it affect the results. But if you give up your duty, that is a massive fault that will cause you problem life after life. And the work that you do will also be full of faults, but that the fault will not be removed. You'll have to suffer for that as well. That's it.
I was meditating a little in the I was meditating about the process. Understanding the meaning of
you can take the mask off while you're speaking.
Yes, try to understand the link of the sense of duty.
Mm-hmm.
Because you mentioned in the class that the importance of to know what is your duty.
Mm-hmm.
And this connected to the purification of consciousness as a progressive path for all of us. Because that can vary according to our consciousness. And it can be applicable also to the Varnash, because you also talk about Varnash and the laws of nature. So in that way, what can be the duty or what can be the sense of duty? Because a sudra can also have his understanding of his duty.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only a brahmana who knows what is his duty, also a sudra basing his consciousness.
Yeah. So, as mentioned in the Gita, that our duty, Krishna does help us to understand what is particularly suitable for our duty. It comes through scriptures, it comes through the guru. Guru means it can be the initiating spiritual master, and it can also be the Shiksha gurus. Quite often that means temple authorities and other, you know, senior devotees who you have a particular relationship with, who are helping you in knowing, you know, what particular duty. So We live in a sort of somewhat multi-human culture, which means that we try to satisfy properly the different spiritual master, the local shiksha, gurus, like that. We try to satisfy, not just select one that's going to stay, that's going to let us do whatever we please. So we try to satisfy. That then Krishna helps us, as Prabhupada said, if we try to serve Krishna, be nicely situated in our duty, Krishna does give that intelligence in the heart. As mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, in that same 18th chapter, those last verses, that Krishna prompts one within the heart, but whatever is prompted within the heart must be confirmed by Guru. So in other words, yes, Krishna, he will give us the intelligence that I think this is really the sort of thing that's really compatibility with my psychophysical nature, not just my consciousness, but the body of God. And but it must be confirmed by the spiritual authorities as well. So the inspiration does come from within the heart, but it must be confirmed by spiritual authorities. That process, so sometimes, therefore, you know, what we see is that when you're dealing with spiritual authority, you know, if you talk to the guru, they want to know what's in your heart, what are your propensities, they want to hear from you so they can help guide you. It's not as if you walk in, sit there silently, say nothing, and they're just going to say, go out and do this, that, and the other. You know, you're speaking to, you know, someone says, I want to get married. Well, then they will deal with that situation. If someone walks into the room, the guru's got no idea, you want to get married, you don't want to get married, that they want to hear, you know, like that. So there's inspiration from within the heart, but then there's confirmation and discussion with spiritual authorities. And by that, we gradually become well situated in the duties, both according to a particular social type of duty, and also in our spiritual duties, that I want you to preach, I want you to do deity worship, I want you. So you see the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he called in three very nice devotees. I want you to worship the deities, I want you to preach, I want you to serve the devotees, like that. So Prabhupada said, those services are all absolute because they're all service to Krishna. There's no higher and lower. But because they're authorized, they're equal. Any service which is authorized by Krishna is equal. It's on the absolute. There's no higher and lower. So does that make any clear?
Well, it's another perspective.
Gradual, progressive aspect that we all understand about performing devotional service according to your growth, your guilty part, and that also your duties can be expanding more as well.
Yes. Because
from the basic level, when we say sutra as a basic, so called sutra in that sense. The sense of duty is basic, is also related to mainly bodily aspect.
Yes, so that
would be growing according to
state
of consciousness.
So, yeah. So for instance, someone may come to the movement and that they're sort of from a work background, what have you, they're, you know, strong and stout, like Jadharat here. And okay, let us put them to work in the kitchen or this or that, and just work them all day, 24 hours a day. But after some time, it's seen that they have propensity for some perhaps administrative ability, brahminical preaching work, something to do with publishing Prabhupada's books, and that just because they've got a strong body doesn't necessarily mean that we should engage them in that for the rest of their lives if they have some propensity to do some work that's more suited to their nature. Like, we should not neglect that. And which is what happened with Jagirat. And, you know, therefore Prabhupada wanted to establish Daivibana Ashram, where, you know, there's a whole institution where mature devotees can actually recognize the propensities in devotees and give them the proper training and qualifications to then do that type of work. So someone may come along to the movement and do all sorts of physical hard work, they've got the strong body, and they may go get some Varnashram, you know, daily Varnashram training in one of our, you know, educational centres, and actually come out as an administrator, as a preacher, as a publisher, or something. So they have a really good first-class ability for that. So our movement, Prabhupada wants that to be in our movement. We're not there yet. But in one sense, it's sort of really up to the, managers with, you know, with what we have at hand.
That is the point I was meditating on, because in the sense that the sense of duty each time becoming subtle, a bigger, broader in understanding, depending on your purification of consciousness.
Yes.
So, duty becomes not just related to my needs or my personal interests. It can be expanded more to purpose to fulfill some principles, maybe society, and then in my consciousness is evolving more complete through more bigger aspect than being more related to God, eternal principles.
Yes.
So basically, that duty, the sense of duty, is expanding.
Yes, so exactly that. And well, Prabhupada says it like this. So what happens, of course, is that we do our duty, but, you know, actually our duty never stops being exalted. So although his consciousness expands through healing and his friendship, but he never stopped being exalted. In fact, he became a better judge. The more his consciousness expanded, he also became a better judge. Prabhupada mentions this. So this is from Krishna Consciousness, Topmost Yogi System. He says, one who has developed attachment to Krishna Consciousness, they say, if you have attachment for your lover, you always think of her. That is love of consciousness. It is natural. It is stated that the woman has another lover besides her husband, shows herself very attentive to the household duties, but is always thinking, when shall my lover and I meet in the night? This is an example. It is possible, in spite of our false engagement, if we love somebody, to think of him always. If materially it is impossible, why not spiritually? That is the whole teaching of the Gita. Right? So there Prabhupada is saying that yes, in this material world we may have to do some duties that we consider, well, this is not, I'm fit to be a gopi or what have you like that, but here I am, you know, doing the work of a sutra or as an administrator or what have you like that. You know, but my consciousness has developed that I want to just be doing more Krishna conscious things. But Prabhupada is saying that the devotee does their duties in this world even better when they're Krishna conscious, because that is a platform where there's no, that doesn't cause disturbances, that they're doing a duty that's pleasing to everyone, even if it's somewhat external to this world, but that maintains their ability to always think of Krishna without being disturbed. So, you know, devotees, their general principle is that whatever, you know, if I'm a family person, it's Just because I become more Krishna consciousness, I'm not going to become less attached or expert or involved in family affairs. I'm going to do it better. So that family life goes on so nice and there's no fault and everyone's happy, which means that that allows me to, yes, internally just have this wonderful spiritual reciprocal relationship of love with the personality of God. Okay, I'm getting the book.
Sorry.
We can take it back. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. We'll leave it there.